From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of December, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will be here from NutrienAg Solutions in Daggerville to discuss that big nor'easter, its impact, and how impressive that storm was on the East Coast. And we'll take a look at dry conditions in the middle part of the United States, along with the western U.S. And, of course, we'll check in on the crops and La Nina in South America as well on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures in the nearby March contract today finished 5 higher at $4.37.5, the May at $4.39.25, up 4.5 cents, and December corn for next year up 3.5 cents at $4.18.5 a bushel. January soybeans $12.20, 18.75 of the rally for the day up higher. Now the March contract at $12.24, 18.5 higher, and November beans up 9 cents at $10.81.25. Bean meal at $4.05.50, up $7.60, and the bean oil 14 cents higher at $40.07. Wheat futures soft red 6.08.25, down a half, and the hard red finished the March at 5.69.25, 0.75 cents lower. Live cattle futures in Chicago, the nearby contract, up 35 cents at $114.85 for 100 pounds. That's in the February. Feeder cattle at 140.45, down 52.5, and lean hogs at $65.80, finished 30 cents higher for the afternoon. A quick look at what's happening in some of the outside markets at this time. Crude oil for the day currently trading at $49 a barrel. That's up at 68 cents for the day. And the diesel fuel, a penny and a half higher at $1.51. Finally, gasoline on the RBOB, 5.25 cents, or rather 0.5 cents higher at $1.39 and 0.3 cents for the afternoon. Mike Zuzlow now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, to discuss the marketplace. Another big day for soybeans, it appears. Mike, thanks for being with us, by the way, on this Friday afternoon.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So what happened with the soybeans today?
Well, I think we had a base built earlier this week from testing some support levels. You know, we went down to that 1142 area to the, that's what the old resistance, now new support. And at the same time, we saw the weekly export sales come out, and we went down low enough, we found demand again. Just about every commodity except beef had really good weekly export sales. You know, corn up 56% from the 4-week average. I believe sorghum was up around 60% from the prior week, and soybeans, we were back up there as well. And meal was very, very strong. I think it was around 60% better than the prior week. So between that and then new news coming out of Argentina that essentially corn and bean planting has ground to a halt, bean planting being less important, less critical right now than corn. But nonetheless, the farmers in that area, as reported by the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange, suggesting they're not going to plant until they get more rains. There is more rain on the way, but it looks very light. And it looks kind of hit and miss these next 5 to 7 days. So all those things, I think, came together, Todd, on the supply-demand side. And that's why beans shine so brightly compared to the other complexes. I think also you had this COVID vaccination starting and the Federal Reserve talking and the fiscal stimulus talking about getting done before the end of this week. I think that really popped the outside markets, the equities, dollar making, you know, fresh 2.5, almost 3-year lows. And the soybeans really grabbed a hold of that as well.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about that. The dollar below 90 now, it's not been there for a while. Tell me what's happening.
Yeah, I think it was funny because I have been getting up a lot earlier this week for a variety of reasons. And so I've been getting into the office, you know, between 4 and 5 in the morning to see, you know, allow me to see some of the news that's coming across. And so I've been able to watch it, you know, pretty consistently for several hours at a time. And, you know, CNBC and Bloomberg and those business stations are really talking up the idea that this vaccination program is just going to unleash amazing inflation, and the Federal Reserve saying they're going to have an easy money policy for the foreseeable future, and people don't have to worry about a taper tantrum. These are the things that create that inflationary pressure in the dollar, and I think the fiscal stimulus certainly didn't hurt either, although as we go to the air right now, I have not seen that cross the wire saying it's a done deal. But these things, I think, brought commodities specifically into the limelight, and I saw the head of the Goldman Sachs commodities from London, I think it was on Thursday morning, say there's no better inflation hedge than commodities. So I wonder whether we're not getting some commodity index buying again coming into this market. And that is in part because I think of the dollar breaking so low. So as we've talked about a lot on your program, a stronger crude oil, weaker dollar is still extremely valuable as far as the canary in the coal mine for the inflationary pressure and what the market's thinking, especially since that relationship between those two is running between a negative 80 and 90% as far as a correlation on like a 12-week basis. So if one goes up, 4%, the other one goes down about 3 to 3.5%. So it's extremely strong negative relationship between the two right now. And that to me just signals inflation.
Can I pick your brains for some clarification just a bit? I think that I have this right. So the idea is that the COVID package making its way through Congress, if it's sized right, won't cause inflation. But the marketplace is saying, hey, wait a second, we have a vaccine in place. Whatever you do, or you're maybe sizing it too big, trying to signal not to size too big. Otherwise, enough money will come into the marketplace that it will actually heat things up and inflation will ensue. Is that correct?
Absolutely right. And the Fed's not going to press on the brake at all. And I think this is where that fiscal stimulus becomes so important when we come back next week, especially knowing that we're going into a holiday week and we had a new high in the stock market on Friday, only to see it turn lower. We saw that dollar, as you said, was below 90, closed back above 90. The Russian ruble went negative. I think there's a lot of betting that's bets have already been placed on this fiscal stimulus bill being a done deal. And to your point, Todd, I think it means to the market that it can help with the COVID vaccination program stimulate a very strong reaction in the real economy the first half of 2021. So I would also say if you don't get that fiscal stimulus bill right away, those COVID vaccinations are not going to do much good for all those people that are losing their unemployment benefits at the end of this year and at the end of next week. And we're talking about 12 or 13 million people, most of those small businesses.
And on the commodity side, what really matters for producers as they consider this is that the lower dollar, which is the inflation hedge, I suppose, means that our commodities on the world marketplace, those that are produced here in the United States, get cheaper.
That's exactly right. And that lower dollar also, I think, signals people like Goldman Sachs, those investment banks that we learned about, those passive commodity index funds that we learned about back before the financial crisis, I think they're dipping their toe back in the water. And that's the really strong suit typically, where they stay long, they don't go short like a hedge fund. So we may be on the cusp of getting them back into this market. So it's a real key time period right now.
And they're in the middle of rebalancing for the coming year. So they could be changing exactly what they're thinking as to how they make up their portfolios.
I think that's exactly right. And this, and some of the genesis of almost all of what we're talking about is the Federal Reserve. And when you and I talked back in July, August, when they made that major structural shift saying, we don't mind higher inflation expectations, the big money people realize that the taper tantrums, the raising of interest rates are going to come extremely slow this time around.
Anything else that we need to talk about before I let you go?
I think the big thing are the technicals going into the weekend, and we did good on the beans closing above the June 2016 high, but the meal did not close above its weekly high from 2018. So its 2018 high is what we want to get back above next week and see if we can do that before we close it down for Christmas.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for being with us, and I look forward to talking with you not next week or the week after that, but in the brand new year. It'll be great to have you on then.
Todd, I look forward to it, and I thank you for everything, and I wish you and your family and all the listeners a blessed Merry Christmas.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us here in the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Check our agricultural programming out online. You can find us at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our programming. Just click and play right from the website. On this Friday, let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agripole. Hey, thanks for being with us. This is the last one for us for the 2020 year because, well, the next two are, I don't know, Christmas Day and New Year's Day. So I think we'll skip through those. We're glad you've been here all year long. Thank you for being with us today. I appreciate that, Eric.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And it's not, how many years have we been doing this now? It's at least been a few, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. A while now. I lose track of time. I don't know how, 4 or 5, maybe more than that. A number of years, that's for sure. Let's start with this nor'easter. As a storm, how did it rank?
Yeah, I am very high. It was impressive. You know, we're always skeptical, right? Whenever you see the forecast models producing as much snow as they were with this one, everyone always wants to be cautious. But there was up to 3.5 inches of liquid equivalent in that, which means you multiply that by 10 or 12, you now know why some places through Pennsylvania and New York got over 40 inches of snow out of this. And I'm a little jealous. You know, I right before Christmas, I wouldn't mind seeing a little snow, but I don't know about 40 inches. And by the way, if we got 40 inches in one event in Champaign, that would, let's see, an average year for us, you know, that would be about 10 inches more than we would have in a good year in terms of snow. So that would be impressive to say the very least.
Yeah, and our snow here tends to come and go Although I like sometimes better when it goes. And I was looking at the temperatures for the week. Gosh, it looks like it's going to be really mild in our part of the world.
Yeah, any shot at cold air that I see coming between now and the end of 2020 is going to be just that, a shot. I mean, it's just going to be a couple of days of cooler weather. And the problem is that, you know, we got plenty of cold air that's anchored over Alaska and over the Arctic. And there are some signals that shouldn't just stay there. But in the meantime, I ran this really cool model called High Split. And what's neat about it is it gives you trajectories on where the air that's over you right now came from and where it's going to be in the coming days. And our problem is we have relatively mild Pacific air moving across much of the United States. And as a result of that, we're seeing, you know, a lack of connection between the shots of colder air and true Arctic air. You combine that with a strong pole of vortex, and you also see that the Pacific Ocean, specifically the MJO, is stuck over there in what we call phase 5 and 6 and maybe a little bit into 7. And this isn't a recipe for bringing in brutally cold air. Now, to be honest with you, I don't necessarily mind it, but I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of the white stuff every now and then in December.
I looked at the maps earlier in the week and made note that my boyhood hometown in Elkhart, Illinois, Logan County, is now in severe drought. That's, you know, it's a winter thing, but that's really dry, and it's not the only place in the nation.
No, the latest drought monitor, which came out yesterday, actually showed expansion of the drought and really didn't show any class improvement in the drought that's in the West. And so this is, you know, usually I tell people, and I've told you this for 4 or 5 years, we don't need to worry about drought really until we get in toward the spring months. So March, April, and then really in May. But you know what? I'm working on some new research here that's trying to understand really where the most important regions are for drought in winter and how that impacts Midwest the following growing season. And I'm backing that up with some research done at the University of Lincoln in Nebraska, or University of Nebraska, Lincoln, excuse me. And I'm starting to think a little bit harder about this. And I just want everybody to know that my concern level is up a little bit. And until we get this jet stream pattern flipped around, and what I mean by that is getting better flow way up there. I'm talking, you know, way up high in the atmosphere out of the Southwest. I don't like what's going on with this drought right now. And it's just something that I'm starting to get a little bit more concerned about. But if I'd had more coffee, maybe I would have felt better about it today. But I just want everyone to know that seeing that drought monitor not make a budge to the end of 2020 has got me concerned going into 2021.
Well, it's just another thing for 2020.
Yes.
One more thing. Speaking of which, the South Americans aren't any happier with 2020 than we are, really. And a lot of that has to do with La Nina, I would think, on the farm. What's it look like today?
Well, so Mato Grosso, just remember that particular state produces the equivalent of an Illinois and an Iowa soybean crop. So they've had three very notable dry time periods plus the late start to the season. Now, just thinking about that and what could possibly be the state of the crop, we would tend to think that we've done some early damage to it. Rains are coming back on, though, and it appears that throughout the end of December and getting through January that there's better chances of seeing more normal, maybe even wetter than normal monsoonal rains from Mato Grosso to Mato Grosso do Sul over toward Parana. That's a key growing area. That's like the I states of South America. So when I start to see that, now the question becomes, how much of a recovery can they get in the crop? And then if it does stay rainy, does it do anything to delay them getting the crop out? But that La Nina, which you asked about, if it fades as expected in the month of January, it might favor, there's a better chance than not, that they could have a wet end of January and February. And that could slow harvest progress and also delay some planting of the Safrina corn. So that their story there is long from over, given that I said it might be a little bit wetter there in the near term. So there's going to be a continual reason to be talking about South American weather, I think, until April.
Hey, speaking of talking about weather a little deeper in to the 2021 year, I want to come back to the United States. You have two snow throwers, I think, in your garage. I think you bought a new one.
And we used it on that half inch of snow. We did.
You were hopeful that you might be able to use it again in January. Has that changed at all? You're still thinking, well,
no, I'm still excited about January and February for some snow. And to be honest, you talk about the drought earlier. The fact that our snow comes and goes the way it does is very good for our soil moisture, because that means it's melting and getting into the soil. So we should be appreciative of this pretty rapid freeze-thaw cycle we tend to get in Illinois, just for the fact that that soil moisture gets replenished by melting snow. But all of the models at this point, and so do the analogs, suggest a pretty active Ohio River Valley storm track, which is to our south and east, which puts us on the backside of a lot of lows. And that could be good for getting us some decent snows as we get past the end of 2020 and start for 2021. So I'm hopeful that that is what we're going to end up seeing. And it appears that the science would back me up on that as well.
Well, we'll find out when we talk to you in 2021 next time around. You have a very good Christmas and a happy new year.
I will. You do the same, Todd. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week. It's up on our website right now if you'd like to hear the whole of the program on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our panelists for the day included Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Rockford, Illinois, along with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. I began by asking Jerry what was unique and different about this past year and what was maybe kind of the same?
Well, I think a couple of things bring to mind is that the inconsistency of the numbers coming out of NAS, or when it comes up, you know, when USDA and into our stocks, and so we're looking back at what we lost in prospective price gains. Had we known that the stocks or the demand was better than we thought, or whatever the reason they came up with, that we had, you know, 350, 400 million less corn stocks on hand, and what that would have done to the raising the low end of the price. Had you done nothing but sold something every day, or once a month, you would have come out with more money in farmers' hands than we otherwise had. And also, of course, the losses that we had in corn grind for ethanol due to the waivers that were made, and I think it's pushing probably close to a billion bushels over 4 years or whatever. You think that have been had we had that, would have been a much different situation. And you know, and my thought is, are we going to finally have we retrenched that in what the USDA or NAS has done since and been pretty proactive in getting their act together and not wanting to get blamed for this again. And of course, it took a while for them, USDA in general, to understand what has happened in China, and that the demand wasn't just all about phase one, And I question sometimes quietly to myself, did we really need phase one? China needed the beans. And we can say, well, China knew that but didn't say anything. Or I hearken back to when the phase one was signed on January 15th, nearly a year ago. President Trump said, you know, this is a big deal for farmers. This is going to be a big, big, big deal. You won't, when it's all done, you won't imagine how good the demand is going to be. And here we are on the first time since really 2011 that we have an opportunity to not produce enough to meet the global demand. And things change, and they change so quickly, beginning with August. And, of course, the Iowa problems with grain and the wind and all that, and our not-so-good production, things change pretty quickly. I mean, you're almost talking a billion bushels almost in soybeans alone, and going from a 900 million carryover to what appears to be, could likely be, a zero carryout, which won't be allowed. And I think we're just in the throes of that. And the traders I have talked with over the last 6 months, you know, were kind of like me. I was kind of not a deer in the headlights, but my goodness, can it happen this fast? And it happened so fast that it caught a lot of people off guard, I think, and selling. Well, you got to sell something here. Beans are $9. They may never see that again. And they're right. We didn't see it again. We saw 10 and then 11 and 12. And so that has changed so quickly for us that I'm not sure that we've totally come to grips, or at least I haven't, and what it means long-term. Is this a long-term thing for China? And are we back to the pre-2000 or during the 2016 level or the pre-tariff level? And if so, this was just a blip in the last 3 years of these markets being in the doldrums for agriculture. And are we back again to China increasing demand compounded like we used to use, 2 to 3 to 4 to 5% a year in their protein needs? And now corn is on the chopping block of being one of them that they may need as well. So that's what I'm playing with. And I actually convinced myself about a month ago to buy land. I didn't think I'd ever do it again. There's no way. My dad once said, when I wanted to buy land for $3,000 an acre, and I wanted to borrow money from him back in 1982, he told me, he's from, of course, North Dakota, as you well know, and myself, and he said, there's not enough corn in the state of Illinois to pay for $3,000 an acre land. And I finally bought it, and it took me 20 years to see $3,000 of land again. But here I did it, and I did.
In 20 years, there was enough corn. It took a while, didn't it?
Right. So I grossly underestimated in my spreadsheet the increase in yield every year that I should have used in my cash flow. That the land that I thought I needed to break even at 135 bushels an acre is now producing 200 or 180. So I misjudged that. But I look at it and said, did I buy the top of the market again? So I'm scratching my head,
That's Jerry Gohlke. He's with the Gohlke Group out of Rockford, Illinois, joined on our Commodity Week program by Brian Stark from here in Champaign County and the Andersons, and Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.